I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. The Conowingo Dam supplies enough clean energy every day to power 160,000 homes and businesses. But this dam and others have greatly altered the Susquehanna River. Legend has it that when shad were migrating upstream to spawn, men used to be able to cross the river on their backs. Last year, a record low, just 8,000 shad made it past the dam, and only 43 made it all the way to their spawning grounds. Plus, millions of tons of polluted sediment have built up in the reservoir behind the dam, nearly filling it. Meanwhile, for the first time since 1980, the Conowingo Dam is up for relicensing. Could this be a watershed moment? That's Midday, after news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. So glad you're with us. Today we're talking about the mighty Susquehanna River and the Conowingo Dam that straddles it. The Susquehanna is the longest river on the East Coast. It supplies half the fresh water in the bay. The Conowingo Dam, just north of Havre de Grace, is the largest dam in the bay watershed. It was built in 1928, even before the Hoover Dam out west. The Conowingo can produce 572 megawatts of nearly emission-free electricity. But that power comes at a price. The nonprofit environmental organization American Rivers recently listed the Susquehanna as one of the most endangered rivers in the nation, in large part because of the Conowingo Dam. One problem is that over the course of nearly a century, the reservoir behind the dam has trapped millions of tons of polluted sediment, so much that it has reached capacity. Another problem, the dam is a formidable barrier for migrating fish. The Susquehanna was once choked with fish, like shad and river herring. And now, despite mechanisms to lift fish, very few make it over the 100-foot Conowingo Dam. But just last month, Exelon Corporation, which owns the dam, agreed to do more to help fish. They plan to upgrade their fish lifts and trap a certain number of fish and truck them upstream. That agreement is part of Exelon's efforts to renew its federal license governing dam operations. Dam licenses last for 30 to 50 years, so we are in a rare moment. It's a once-in-a-generation opportunity for environmental groups and state agencies to pressure the operator of the dam on a host of environmental issues. What improvements are needed? What improvements are possible? And what does all this mean for the sickly Susquehanna, not to mention the bay? Later in this hour, we'll hear from Colleen Hicks, Regulatory and Licensing Manager for Exelon Power, and Tara Moberg, a freshwater scientist at the Nature Conservancy. But right now, the editor of the Bay Journal, Carl Blankenship, is here to help us understand how we got here and what's at stake. Carl Blankenship, welcome to Midday.
Good to be here.
Very glad that you are with us. Let's talk about the recent fish passage agreement. The dam has had fish elevators for a long time. First of all, tell us what a fish elevator looks like.
A fish elevator is a really, really big bucket. It's about the one that's operating now is about 3,500 gallons, or holds about 3,500 gallons, and it lures fish or fish swim into it. They're coming upstream, and a gate closes behind it, and it's lifted up, you know, about 100 feet above the dam.
So it just, like, lifts. It's impossible, folks, to talk about this without using your hands. Both Carl and I are trying to describe with our hands the course of the route of this bucket. So the bucket just sort of lifts the fish up and over the dam.
It doesn't take it over the dam. It takes it up to a kind of a sluice at the top of the dam, and then it releases them into this kind of, like, trough, and then they swim along the trough over the top of the dam.
Okay.
The lift just goes straight up and down.
Okay. So there is a fish elevator right now. How does this new agreement change things?
They will need to put bigger buckets on, or a bigger bucket on. I believe they're going to, like, 6,000 gallons, and there's only one at the dam right now, but it's capable of having two. And so they're going to have two 6,000 fish buckets on there for fish lifts on there. And
So it's like four times the
capacity
they have.
About four times the capacity, and it'll operate slightly faster than it does now. And so it will greatly increase the ability to move fish. But importantly, they are going to make adjustments below the dam to kind of address one of the issues is attracting fish to the dam, and the flows, river flows, are really important to that. And they're going to do some structural changes below the dam to kind of better attract fish to the ladder or the fish lift.
So it's not just a bigger elevator.
Right.
It's some other changes.
There's a whole lot of improvements that are made to it.
And so what is the estimate? I mean, the current setup has not been getting many shad upstream to keep going upstream to spawn. What is the outlook? What is the projection of what this new setup, how many fish will actually make it?
Well, the goal is to get 2 million shad and 5 million river herring above all four hydrologic dams in the river. And I think that means they've got to get like 5 million shad and 12 million river herring over Conowingo. And so they have to get a lot more fish over. I mean, there were only about 8,000 shad moved over it last year. And so they have to lift a lot more fish, and they've got to do these other improvements to get the lifts there. But, you know, there's other issues that come into play. No, shad are at low levels in most places along the coast. And so, you know, Exelon has said that just building fish lifts alone doesn't guarantee that you'll get more shad back, because, you know, some people think they're being caught in fisheries off the East Coast. And, you know, to the extent that that's true and affects the number of fish, there's a variety of factors. So
in other words, that speaks to how many shad are trying to get
right
back up the Susquehanna to spawn.
Right. And there's really complex issues, because there's other fish there that kind of crowd them out of the fish lift. It's a very complex issue, both engineering and biologically.
And there's also part of this agreement, am I right, is to trap some number of fish and truck them
to a higher point? Yeah, they used to do that until fish passages were built in all four dams. You know, these agreements go back like almost 30 years when they started building fish lifts. And at that point, people thought they'd build fish lifts and the problem was over. Fish would go upstream with no problem. And then the lifts didn't operate as well as they hoped. The number of fish getting upstream, they used to truck fish upstream until about 2000. And they were actually getting more fish beyond all four dams when they were trucking them.
I haven't actually said there are four dams on the Susquehanna.
Right.
The Conowingo is by far the biggest,
yeah,
right? And it's the biggest hurdle.
There's four dams in the first 55 miles of the river, and it's the largest East Coast spawning area for shad, so you can see it's a pretty big impact.
Okay, so 2 million is the goal of this
above
new
all four of them
to get shad past all four of them.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, compared to the current situation, there's supposed to be like measurable. Exelon is supposed to have to make sure that the numbers actually are coming through, or else they have to take other actions?
Right. Yeah, and that was one of the criticisms of the old agreement. As you know, it was thought you built the fish lift, the problem goes away. And then there were problems. The agencies working on shad felt like they didn't have any opportunity during the last 30-year agreement to go back when there were problems and get them addressed. And so the new agreement's designed so they can go back. There's check-ins along the way to make adjustments if they are not getting the number of fish upstream that they hope to, you know, tweak the lifts, make adjustments downstream. And ultimately, there's a possibility of building an entirely big, second big fish lift structure there too.
But it would still be fish lifts. I mean,
The trucking is supposed to be the trucking which they used to do and they're going to start doing again. That's a temporary thing to get fish upstream until lifts are up and operating and, you know, hopefully taking over the process, because you can never truck, you can never reach your goals by trucking fish. It's,
2 million would be a lot of fish to truck. That is Carl Blankenship, editor of the Bay Journal, here on Midday on WYPR. We're talking about issues around the Conowingo Dam on the Susquehanna River. The dam is up for relicensing. Let's talk about sediment. The Army Corps of Engineers and the Maryland Department of the Environment recently released a report on the buildup of sediment in the reservoir behind the dam. What do we know now about where we are in terms of the reservoir's capacity?
The reservoir is essentially filled. I mean, it's pretty much at its capacity. I mean, it will build up in some years and be washed down, but it's what they call it. It's at equilibrium, where basically over a period of time it isn't really collecting more sediment, and so over a period of years as much sediment will wash out as what is collected behind it.
So, and tell us about the sediment. What is it made up of?
It's clay, it's sands, it's anything that's in the river upstream, and although the bigger issue, according to the core report for the bay, wasn't the sediment. The sediment's kind of dramatic because it creates these spectacular blooms, but it's the nutrients.
Pause right there. Hold that thought. But when you say the sediment creates these spectacular blooms, what's that process?
Or plumes, I should have said. Plumes of sediment.
Yeah, I think you did say plumes, actually. But how do we get from sediment in a reservoir to plumes?
Okay, when there's big storms, it will excavate some of the, or scour some of the sediment that's built up, and it sends it downstream, and you get these, you know, spectacular brown plumes that reach far down the bay of the sediment, and it looks pretty eerie when the whole top of the bay is brown.
And aside from looking daunting, what kind of problem is that for the bay?
The sediment is not as big of a problem, according to the Army Corps of Engineers study, as the nutrients that's with the sediment, and the fact that the dam, by being filled, isn't trapping as many nutrients as it was before, and it's sending more, or allowing more nitrogen and phosphorus to go downstream, and that's what triggers algae blooms in the bay and contributes to the water quality problems.
So you get brown plumes of sediment hanging in the bay right after the storm,
right.
And then that feeds the nutrients that are part of that brown plume feed algae, which become algae blooms.
Yeah, there's actually two issues. The sediment's kind of a spectacular event that's tied to a big storm, and you get a lot of dirt that goes downstream and it looks bad. But the nutrients is an ongoing thing, where every year you get more nutrients that go over the dam than you got before because they aren't being trapped.
So what kind of solution is there to this? What are people looking at doing?
That's a really good question. People don't know how to address the nutrients. They weren't accounted for when they set the bay cleanup goals in 2010. These are additional nutrients which, to meet the water quality goals they set, they have to find a way to reduce them. And it's a real problem because nutrients that come down the Susquehanna River tend to be worse for the bay than nutrients from other places because, or at least for the dead zone that everybody talks about in the top part of the bay, in the deep areas of the upper bay, because the bay is an extension of the Susquehanna River. The Susquehanna comes straight down and feeds into that, and when it's sending nutrients down and feeds algae blooms, they make the oxygen worse there than nutrients from other places. In fact, they estimated that about the filling of the reservoir sends about 2.2 million pounds of nitrogen downstream. That's only about a 2% increase in what comes down the Susquehanna. But if that's not controlled from the Susquehanna, you'd have to reduce almost twice the amount of nitrogen from other places, almost more than 4 million pounds.
and to so, have the same water quality impact.
I have the impression that Governor Hogan's administration is in favor of dredging some of the sediment away.
That's been proposed by some people, but the Corps report said that's really not very feasible because the cost of dredging are horrendous. They're in the tens to hundreds of millions of dollars a year just to keep pace with what's coming down the river.
So dredging is really expensive.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to let you go. We need to take a break. We've talked about the sediment, and we've talked about trying to help the fish spawn. Any other big issue that we should have in our mind that's being discussed as part of the relicensing of the Conowingo Dam?
Those are the big issues.
Those are the big ones.
It's just a problem that you have this really big. It's not just the biggest river and a big dam, but it's only 10 miles from the
mouth of the river.
Mouth of the river, and that's real. There's big dams in other rivers along the East Coast, but nothing that's that close to the mouth. And so it really has a big impact on the fish, and it's very limited space to remediate environmental problems.
I really appreciate your walking us through these issues. Carl Blankenship is editor of the Bay Journal. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take, as I said, a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk with Colleen Hicks from Exelon Power and Tara Moberg from the Nature Conservancy about more issues relating to the relicensing of the Conowingo Dam. And you can join this conversation. Do you fish in the Susquehanna? How do you feel about the dam? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the Conowingo Dam. The dam is up for relicensing for the first time in more than 30 years. Nonprofits, as well as state agencies, are seizing the opportunity to call for new, more environmentally friendly stipulations. Joining me by phone to talk about this is Colleen Hicks. She's regulatory and licensing manager for Exelon Power, the owner of Conowingo Dam. So glad you could join us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also joining us by phone is Tara Moberg, a freshwater scientist at the Nature Conservancy and a board member of the Low Impact Hydropower Institute. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me.
And Tara, let me start with you. What are the Nature Conservancy's main goals in terms of the Conowingo Dam?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Carl brought up two of them, which are we're really focused on the opportunity to restore access for migratory fish that are making their ocean journey, actually as we speak on the phone today, from the ocean up the Chesapeake Bay to the Susquehanna River, currently the dam, and the three dams above it block about 98% of that historic habitat, and that has impacts coastwide. So that's our first goal, and Carl mentioned that. And we share that with a lot of the partners that are at the table in this relicensing. The second goal is that, and Carl touched on this too, is assuring that we understand and mitigate for the impacts of the dam on sediment and related water quality issues, include that in the budget for the bay. And then the third issue, which I think we haven't touched on yet, is assuring that the way that the dam is operated and the way that it influences stream flows below the dam is providing enough habitat for fish and mussels and aquatic life in the upper part of the upper part of the river and all the way down through the bay.
I'm having where your voice level for some reason, Tara, is going up and down like as I understand the level of the river does sometimes when the dam goes on and off generating electricity. So I'm not sure I fully understood the third goal. Could you restate that for me?
Yes, and I apologize. I'm calling from Arizona, and so I'm calling from a hotel room. Is that better?
That's much better. If it stays at that level, it would be great.
Okay, wonderful. So the third issue is the relationship between the operations of the dam, which you just mentioned, the up and down flows, and the habitat that it influences downstream and making sure that we have enough habitat available for fish and aquatic life below the dam and through the upper part of the bay.
Well, how? Tell me a little bit more about how, why that habitat is affected, how it's affected, or what kind of change the Nature Conservancy would like to see in that habitat below the dam.
Yeah, so we've been working with the Fish and Wildlife Service and Exelon and the Chesapeake Bay Foundation and American Rivers and some of the other partners at the table to look at different operational alternatives. Right now, as you'd mentioned, the way that the dam is operated, it stores water during the day at times like right now while people are at work and kids are at school. And then the releases below the river are very low. And from our calculations, they kind of simulate drought conditions. And then as we arrive home from work and start cooking dinner and taking showers in the evening, the water is pushed through the dam to generate electricity, and that pulse of water actually simulates flood conditions. So this fluctuation daily between a drought condition and a flood condition has resulted in relatively little habitat being available downstream. Some of the estimates from the relicensing studies show that less than 5% of available of habitat is available downstream for species like striped bass and shad eggs. So we're hoping that in through the conversation and this relicensing, we can improve those conditions.
Well, let me ask Colleen Hicks of Exelon to weigh in on these questions. I don't know, first of all, whether you consider it fair to describe to use the phrase drought conditions to describe the situation when a lot of water has been pulled out of the river. But does Exelon have plans to address the concerns that Tara Moberg just laid out?
Sure. We are looking forward to delving more into flow discussions with Marilyn and its partners on flows. We currently provide flows according to our current FERC license to make sure that we're always providing continuous flows. And one of the considerations for us is to help Maryland meet its peak electricity demands on the warmest days. And that's one of the considerations that we'll discuss as we look at flow discussions and have negotiations with Maryland and its partners.
The fish passage agreement that I spoke with Ken Blankenship about, as I understand it, this came as a result of an out-of-court settlement rather than a legal battle with the Fish and Wildlife Agency. Why did Exelon take that route?
Frankly, it's just the easiest route to sit down with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and other interested agencies to see what we can do together collaboratively to solve the problem, to address the issues regarding fish passage. And, you know, we were successful in doing that. We spent many months in conference rooms talking about issues, sharing ideas, and in the agreement that we came up with, we are hopeful will help the shad population and the other species of fish in the river. I thought Carl did a great job describing the agreement. You know, one of the major parts of the agreement is the trap and truck measure that we agreed to, where we're going to trap up to 100,000 river herring and American shad and bypass those other dams on the river and hopefully jumpstart the population of those species.
Is there any, Colleen Hicks, do you have any idea how much this agreement is going to cost Exelon?
We anticipate the cost to be a minimum of $155 million. So it's a significant investment that we're making in fish passage.
And that's over how many years?
We're anticipating that Conowingo may have a 50-year license for FERC.
So this will be over the life of the license. Tara Moberg, the existing fish lifts seem to have become less and less effective over the years. Do we know why?
Yes, I think Carl hit on this a little bit. There's a couple of issues. One is the attraction to to the fish lift. So with those pulsing flows, fish are having a little bit of a hard time finding the lifts. And we learned that from some of the studies. And so Exelon, and I agree, I think that the agreement that Exelon and the service arrived at will be of great benefit to shad and river herring. And one of the prongs of that agreement is doing studies below the dam on how to better attract fish. So whether there's infrastructure or ways of operating that can attract fish to the base of the dam. The second issue is crowding. There are a lot of other types of fish that are getting into the lifts, and so trying to address engineering solutions to focus on the fish that are trying to migrate up to New York and limiting the amount of fish that would typically stay below the dam in the lower river.
So there are there fish getting into the fish elevator who actually aren't intending to go upstream? I mean, it's not part of their pattern?
Yeah, they're gizzard shad that can spawn in both lakes and rivers, and so that specifically they're a gizzard shad. It's a different type of shad that can spawn in either of those types of settings, habitats that are getting into the lift.
Well, how on earth can you keep fish? I mean, can't explain to us. There's going to be two buckets, each twice as big as the current. Fish elevator. So how do you keep a fish out of the fish elevator? I mean, how do you make it fit just the fish that you're trying to get upstream?
Well, I believe part of the proposal is actually sorting them. And so when they do get them into the bucket, sorting one from the other to move them upstream, I think it's something that that level of detail wasn't written out into the agreement.
Colleen Hicks, can you tell me how that part will work?
Sure. When we implement the trap and truck measures, we are only going to truck the American shad and the river herring. And what we're going to do is once we collect the fish in the hoppers, we're going to have biologists sort the fish. And so they'll sort out the river herring and the shad, and those are the particular species that will be trucked and put back into the river above the dams.
That is Colleen Hicks, who is regulatory and licensing manager for the owner of Conowingo Dam, Exelon Power, here on Midday on WYPR. Also with us is Tara Moberg, a freshwater scientist at the Nature Conservancy. And we're taking calls at 410-662-8780. If you have a question about how the dam works, or if you'd like to understand something about it, give us a call, 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. One of the things that I found myself sort of losing focus on as I was reading about the Conowingo Dam and some of the issues in relicensing is that hydropower in general is, I read, 70% of the renewable energy infrastructure of the United States. And I'm wondering, Tara Moberg with the Nature Conservancy, should a hydroelectric dam get some sort of special benefits in relicensing because it is renewable energy?
That's a really good question. And related to that, there are benefits of hydroelectricity that are recognized by our markets. And so there are hydroelectric dams that have certifications because of their operations, and they can use that certification and sell it on the renewable energy market. I think we haven't fully realized how to incorporate the benefits of hydropower's low-carbon energy footprint in the relicensing process, and I think there are opportunities to do that.
And Colleen Hicks, in Exelon's view, do you feel that this regulatory process is giving enough attention to the renewable aspect of what Conowingo Dam produces?
You know, it's a balance between making sure we address the environmental impacts as well as making sure that we're able to provide the energy that Maryland needs. Conowingo does provide, or is one of the largest contributors for renewable power in the state of Maryland. And so it's important, in order to have that renewable power available, that we, you know, relicense Conowingo.
Michael has called us from Catonsville with, I think, a point that relates to that. Michael, welcome to Midday.
Yeah, hi. I design super efficient houses, and I'm the president of the Passive House Alliance of the United States. And I just wanted to point out that this is a perfect example of how interconnected we all are with our environment, and how those of us who have homes or intend to build, or build homes for ourselves or others, we can use high-efficiency building in both new construction and retrofits, and combine that with solar and storage, you can dramatically level off the peak demands, which it sounds like are driving the habitat concerns below the Conowingo Dam. So I just want to put out to everyone that both at the policy level, those who are looking to solve these problems, and to those individuals who are environmentally concerned, making wise decisions about improving the level of energy efficiency in homes and using renewables wisely with storage can really go a long way to solve these problems.
Michael, I appreciate your making that point. Colleen Hicks, let me ask you to respond to that, because my hunch would be that even with smarter homes, smarter use of electricity in homes, that Exelon's always going to need a peak power plant. Colleen Hicks?
I'm here. What Conowingo does, it provides energy on those peak days. And what it does it at a lower cost relative to other generation sources, as, like, for instance, coal. Hydro has, the fuel is water. And because the fuel is water, it can provide electricity at much lower cost relative to more expensive other types of generation that also has the added benefit of not producing any greenhouse gases.
Right, and so I guess that leads me to another question. We're going to talk more after. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to talk more about some of the issues that stakeholders are raising as Conowingo Dam faces relicensing. And at some point, Colleen Hicks, I would like your thoughts about it. At what point the cost of what it is stakeholders are asking for becomes so great that it doesn't make sense from Exelon's point of view. We'll address that after a break. We're going to talk more with Colleen Hicks of Exelon and Tara Moberg of the Nature Conservancy about the Conowingo Dam and the issues presented by its relicensing. You can be part of this conversation if you fish on the Susquehanna, or if you take advantage of the recreation opportunities at the Conowingo Dam. Give us a call. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Midday at WYPR.org is our email address. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about the environmental impacts of the Conowingo Dam, which is up for relicensing. And that's something that only happens once in a generation. I'm speaking with Tara Moberg, a freshwater scientist at the Nature Conservancy. She's also a board member of the Low Impact Hydropower Institute. And joining us by phone is Colleen Hicks, regulatory and licensing manager for the owner of Conowingo Dam, Exelon Power. We have a call from Julia in Baltimore. Julia, welcome to Midday.
Yes, thank you. This relicensing, if the dam is not relicensed, what are they going to do, tear it down?
I don't know, Julia. Let's ask Colleen Hicks of Exelon to address that.
We are confident that the dam will be relicensed. We're committed to working with stakeholders to make sure that happens and address all the concerns that are raised as part of the relicensing process.
Okay, but technically, in law, if I just want to make sure Julia gets an answer to her question about what actually would happen. I mean, already, I think this license actually expired a few years ago, right?
That's correct. The license expired in 2014, and since then we've been working on annual licenses that are automatically issued by FERC each year. There are rules that would dictate what happens if a license is not renewed. You know, it would be similar to like a decommissioning, and we would have to still maintain the dam for flood purposes and for other reasons and for habitat. But we are confident that the dam will be relicensed. And as I mentioned before, we're working with all affected stakeholders to make sure that we address their concerns and that the dam can be relicensed.
Tara Moberg of the Nature Conservancy, some biologists have said the only way to bring back the Susquehanna and to protect the various species we've been talking about is to take down dams. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that is a consideration over the long term. And the beauty of the agreement that just came together between Exxon and the Fish and Wildlife Service this month is that it has those performance-based goals, so it commits those two organizations to working toward passing a percentage of fish instead of a specific technology. So I think we'll know in the next 20 years whether or not that's working and whether the conversation should escalate to other alternatives like dam removal.
Listeners, you can be part of this conversation. Do you think hydropower facilities like the Conowingo Dam should have extra leeway when it comes to environmental regulations because they produce pollution-free power? What would you like to know about the way this dam operates? This is your chance to ask some very knowledgeable people. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us at 410-662-8780. Tara Moberg, you are an expert in hydroelectric dams. As I mentioned, you're on the board of an institute that looks at that. Is the sediment problem at Conowingo a common problem?
It is a common problem, especially for large dams. But the good news is that as a lot of our dam infrastructure is turning close to 100, like Conowingo Dam, we've learned a lot over the years about ways to mitigate those problems. So some of those ways, Carl mentioned dredging, we've learned that's very cost prohibitive and not effective. It isn't an enduring solution. There are opportunities to invest in watershed management upstream to try to keep the sediment from moving into the dam in the first place, and kind of innovative solutions like that are coming to the fore just in the last couple of decades.
Colleen Hicks, Exelon is paying for a study on the sediment buildup. Why isn't the recent report from the Army Corps of Engineers and the Maryland Department of Environment sufficient? What else do we need to learn?
Well, as part of Maryland's 401 water quality certification review, they asked Exelon to commit to spending up to $3.5 million to gather more information regarding sediment. And so there's various studies and modeling that's being done to help look at the impact of sediment in the various basins along the Susquehanna River, meaning behind the other dams, including Conowingo. We've also hired experts to work with Maryland and their officials to study sediment transport, the movement of the sediment in the water. And in terms of, you know, just the sediment impact to Conowingo, you know, if clean water reaches the dam, clean water will pass the dam. You know, sediment is not produced at Conowingo, and, you know, we're working with others to address the issue. We've done some studies, bathymetry studies, to look at the, you know, where the sediment is in the water, and we're working with the modelers in Maryland to look at different ways and get more information on sediment, and we're definitely supporting efforts to keep the nutrients and phosphorus from entering into the watershed in the first place.
Tara, I confess I'm not sure I completely understood Ken Blankenship's explanation of why the pollutants, the phosphorus, the nutrients that come down the Susquehanna are somehow have more impact on the bay, or compensating for them would have more impact than other places. I guess what I'm trying to ask you is how does the Nature Conservancy look at the risk of pollutants crossing the Conowingo Dam? I take Colleen Hicks' point that they're not created by the dam, but how does the Nature Conservancy look at what that means for the total effort to clean up the bay?
Yes, I agree with Colleen that Conowingo isn't producing these pollutants, but what happened over the last 80 years is that it's storing the sediments, and by storing them, it's kind of changing the chemistry in the reservoir, and I think and changing how active those pollutants might be when they move over the dam during a large storm event. And those are the studies we're really appreciative that Exxon is funding right now. We're trying to understand those interactions, so how the quality of that sediment and the kind of the activeness of the pollution changes while it's in the reservoir and pulses over the dam.
We have an email from Monica who makes this point that I'd like perhaps both of you to address. The Susquehanna River originates in Pennsylvania, Monica writes, which has done absolutely nothing, her words, to remediate the pollution they put into the river every day. The problem of nitrates needs to be dealt with swiftly at the source in Pennsylvania, because there is little that can be done in Maryland when it's too late. Tara, would you address that?
Sure. I'm actually, my office is based out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and so I really appreciate the comment and recognize that it is the majority of the sediment and nutrients attached to the sediment that are being contributed from the Susquehanna River do originate in Pennsylvania, and even some from New York. So the river actually starts in Cooperstown, New York, and makes its way over 400 miles down to the bay. I will say that there are a lot of activities on the ground, though, and a lot of organizations that are working with developers and landowners, including agricultural communities, to try to get practices on the ground. And I was alluding to that a little bit earlier, to try to restore floodplains and forests next to the rivers to capture those nutrients and retain and process them and make them less of a pollution problem for the bay. So I think in sum, it's going to absolutely take a commitment of all parties, and one of the big parties is going to be the upper basin state, Pennsylvania and New York.
Colleen Hicks from Exelon, how would you respond to Monica's point about Pennsylvania's role in this?
Similar to Tara's, but just to clarify, the Susquehanna starts up in New York in Cooperstown, and we see the sediment, the resolution to the sediment issue, as a regional science-based pollution approach. You know, we feel like it has to be all the affected states, playing a part, and the decision has to be, the resolution has to be based on sound science.
And is dredging an option in Exelon's view?
We're following the science, and the Lower Susquehanna River Watershed Assessment did determine that dredging wasn't a viable solution.
I referred a minute ago, I gave the wrong first name for Carl Blankenship, the editor of the Bay Journal, who was with us. I apologize for that. Mary has called us from Havre de Grace. Mary, welcome to Midday. Mary?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I live in Havre de Grace, one of the towns downstream from the Conowingo Dam, and I'm one of the citizens who has taken a long interest in the dam and how it was constructed, and the environmental impact of the dam, and also, you know, the possibility of flooding in our town and the like. My understanding is that embedded within the deeper layers of the sediment are long-lasting, unfortunately, toxins such as PCBs. And so dredging is not, and removal of the dam, they are not really viable options. And I'll take your response offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary, for the question. Tara Moberg, can you address that?
Yeah, related to Colleen's note, I think dredging is, we found dredging wasn't an option specifically because it couldn't physically move the amount of material that would need to be moved to make up for the problem. Related to legacy contaminants, I think that is a possibility. We don't understand the extent to which those may be stored in the dam right now, but those would have to be considered under that long-term solution.
Tara, I also wanted to ask you about federal legislation that is pending it's called H.R. 8. It's passed the House. I think it's pending in the Senate that would have some impact on how Conowingo Dam is regulated. Can you tell us briefly about that?
I can share briefly our role and what I understand of the legislation. So part of the issues with that legislation are that it would remove authority from the states under the Clean Water Act, or at least transfer that authority to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And this would happen for all states across the U.S. as a proposal. It would also transition authority for considerations like fish passage from the experts, Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service, to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And so while we agree with what we understand to be the goals of the reform, which would be a more efficient process, that does recognize the value of low carbon energy, but we don't support that at the cost of the collaborative process that's developed over the last 50 years to make sure that we really have a system set up to balance the power values of the river, but also the many non-power related values like fisheries and communities.
Colleen, we're down to just a minute or so. Does that match your understanding of the legislation, and why does Exelon support this legislation?
Well, Exelon has not taken a position on the legislation, and we are committed to working collaboratively with the agencies the way we have for the last better part of a decade in looking at the issues with Conowingo, whether it's fish passage, sediment, or flows. And, I think indicative of that is the agreement that we just reached with the Department of Interior, to improve fish passage. So our goal is to work with the stakeholders involved and to address all the issues associated with Conowingo across the table from the state of Maryland and its partners.
Just a few seconds left there. We got a call from Greg in Baltimore. I don't have time to talk to him, but he wants to know if there are any efforts to improve Route 1 for pedestrians or cars as part of the relicensing. Colleen?
There are no plans to improve Route 1 as part of the relicensing. It's a state road, and so it's not part of the relicensing of Conowingo.
Okay, I really appreciate your answering these questions. It's obviously a lot of big issues that will be taken up in this relicensing. Colleen Hicks, Regulatory and Licensing Manager for the owner of the Conowingo Dam, Exelon Power. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks also to Tara Moberg, a freshwater scientist at the Nature Conservancy and board member of the Low Impact Hydropower Institute. Thanks.
It was our pleasure. Thank you.
And also, I want to thank Bay Journal editor Carl Blankenship, who joined us earlier in the hour. And I want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features unique sandwiches and salads with specials each day, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. Baltimore City Public Schools have a new CEO. We'll speak to Sonia Santelices about her goals, and we'll hear from others about the qualities of a good chief. Tomorrow on Midday. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.